A very busy show Thursday, October 5th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We welcome local author Tony Renzoni and playwright Lauren Rosenay to chat about a new musical honoring local softball legend Joan Joyce. Sacred Heart University scholar in residence Dr. Gary Rose commented on the current GOP House controversy in D.C. While I had some thoughts on word that more wall construction will resume along a stretch of the southern U.S. border. All right, up and away as we continue here in the 3 o'clock hour, 203-333-9422. Once again, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Coming up in just a bit, going to tell you about some great concerts that are coming up this weekend regarding the celebration of the Columbus Day holiday, and some concerts going on at the Klein Memorial in Bridgeport. So we'll do that for you coming up. And a reminder also, if you want to email me, very simple. It's Paul, P-A-U-L, Paul, at WICC600.com. Once again, Paul at WICC600.com. And as a reminder, we have News 8 coming up at 6. News 8 coming up at 6, and the Best of Melissa in the Morning at 6:30. Best of Melissa at 6:30, right here on WICC. All right, going to talk about something really cool, really neat. And if you're about my age, or maybe a little older, a little younger, you remember the legendary Joan Joyce from softball fame, but also from LGPA fame. Also, her years of playing with the Raybestos Braquettes, who, of course, in the Stratford-Bridgeport area, that team was legendary. Well, there is a new musical getting underway, a Joan Joyce musical. It'll be the Seven Angels Theater, One Plank Road in Waterbury. The opening performance begins tonight, and it runs through October 22nd, so check it out. You've got a few weeks to go see this. So joining us right now is local author Tony Renzoni. We've had Tony on the show before. He's an author of many, many great local books, including Connecticut bootlegger Queen Nellie Green, Connecticut Rock and Roll, Historic Music Venues, and, of course, Connecticut softball legend Joan Joyce, and Lauren Rosenay, who is joining us. She is connected with the play as well. Lauren, Tony, good afternoon. How are you guys?
Hi.
Hi,
good. Paul. Good to be back on ICC.
Great, Tony, and great, Lauren. Great to have you folks with us. First of all, Tony, let's start with you. Before we get into the play with Lauren, Tony, talk about the book. And we've had you on about the book before, but just in case people are not familiar with the book about Connecticut softball legend Joan Joyce, give us kind of a summary of the book, Tony, and why you wrote it.
Okay. How many hours do you have, Paul?
Well, yeah.
Now, as I've mentioned before, I devoted 7 pages to her accomplishments. But basically, she's considered by many, including myself, to be the greatest female athlete in sports history. There's never going to be anyone like her. Now that she passed, there's never going to be anyone like Joan Joyce. The only one you can compare her to is Babe Zaharias, and I make a note in my book that she's even better. There's always going to be individual stars like Mia Hamm or Serena Williams, but there's never going to be another Joan Joyce. I got to be very close friends with Joan, and I miss her dearly, like many others. But she was in a class by herself. She was world famous during her time with the Burkett and the Connecticut Falcons, by the way, from Meriden. She's just a phenomenal athlete, coach, referee, and certainly a person. She's in 21 Halls of Fame, incredibly, and for starring in fast pitch softball, basketball, golf, volleyball, power volleyball. She was a referee for 34 years, a golf coach at FAU for 18 years, and FAU head softball coach for nearly 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Pitched 150 no hitters, 50 perfect games, and she set a golf record that hasn't been broken in over 40 years of 17 putts in one round. And there's only 18 holes in the.
That's pretty. That's when I read that, I went, "What? How is that possible?" Yeah. So now, so Lauren Rosene, let me get you in here. How did you get involved in this with this play that we're going to talk about here?
Yeah, sure. So Tony Renzoni is actually a friend of mine, and so Tony would always talk about how Joan's story reads just like a movie, and at the time. When, you know, he would say this, I was working for the Legacy Theater in Brantford, Connecticut as their company manager. And I thought, well, you know, I'm working at this theater. Let me bring it to the artistic director of the theater, Keely Bazed in Knudsen, and see if we can turn this into a play. And it slowly evolved into this musical. And we just kind of wanted to put it on the stage at Legacy Theater to see kind of what our rough draft of the script looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And so we fit it anywhere we could on the schedule, which ended up being a 10 a.m. show on a Saturday morning. And we sold out all four performances that we had to add even a few more performances. It was so well received. So now we are just so grateful to be bringing the show to Waterbury, Connecticut, which is Joan Joyce's hometown. So it's just been really, really special. The show has taken on a life of its own that I never could have expected. And, yeah, it's been really, really special.
So, Lauren, before we get back to Tony, and Tony, I'll ask you about this in a moment, but, Lauren, the transfer of a book to a stage play, and I know how tough that can be because my son works on Broadway, so I hear all these stories all the time, but how tough was it, Lauren, or was it not tough to translate Tony's book to a theater production?
Well, you know, I will say that Tony's been a huge part of just kind of being a resource to us if we had any questions or, you know, that sort of thing. And I think maybe what we started focusing on is, you know, which moments we really wanted to highlight in the show, which one of them was, you know, when Joan struck out Ted Williams. And so that was one moment we wanted to highlight in the show. Another moment was when Joan was younger and, you know, she went to go play Little League with her brother. And she was ultimately kicked out of the game because she was told girls can't play. So, you know, we would find these moments in Tony's book that, you know, we just sort of built the play around. And slowly it just sort of became what it is now, which is something we're really proud of.
Tony, how about the translation of your work from the pages to the stage production with the help of Lauren? Easy, difficult, surprised how it came out? Because I don't think you've ever done this before, right?
No. Well, first of all, Lauren and Keely are tremendous. They're gems. Keely has a voice you wouldn't believe. It's unbelievable. But to answer your question, when I first heard about a musical, because I had in mind, as Lauren said, maybe a movie,
mm-hmm.
or I'd be open to a play. But then they mentioned a musical, and I said, and I couldn't wrap my head around it. So I called Joni, and Joni felt the same way. And she says, I can't even imagine. So I went to the first dress rehearsal, and I was blown away.
Wow.
My jaw dropped. So I called Joni, and I said, Joni, you got to come down and see this play. She's in Florida. She was in Florida. So she did manage to finally come up, and she loved to play. And she gave Keely, who plays Joni, the highest compliment you can get. She said, I felt myself up there.
Wow.
And because of your interpretation. And it was like my whole life flashed in front of me. And she did get emotional, which was a little bit unusual for Joni. And she wanted to come to Waterbury, her hometown, when it played, because I said it might be going to Waterbury. She couldn't wait. But unfortunately, she passed away.
Yeah.
And ironically, she passed away on the same day as her dad, who in the story, you'll see that there was such a bond, a close bond between her and her dad. It was unbelievable. The love and the respect is unbelievable. But Paul, it's a very uplifting and inspiring play. I think everyone needs to see that. It comes at a good time. And I've never been to an event where everyone after the show I talked to, they had a smile on their face, and they said how uplifting it was. And they said, how did I not know this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because she never promoted herself, and that's the point.
But, Lauren, Tony, just I want to get back to Lauren here for just a second because time is getting short. Lauren, talk about the name of the woman who plays Joan Joyce, and how did you cast that?
Yeah, well, so the co-writer Keely Basin Knudsen is actually playing the elder Joan. We have three different Joans in the story. We have a child, Joan Joyce, who's played by 11-year-old Riley Maxwell. And then we have teenage Joan Joyce, which is played by Kirsten Bjork. And then we have adult Joan Joyce, who's played by Keely Basin Knudsen, who is the co-writer with me. So I think ultimately with Keely, we were trying to cast someone to play adult Joan, but ultimately we couldn't find anyone who could do the role justice as well as Keely, and she is phenomenal. Her voice is magic. Mm-hmm. The way she embodies Joan is just so special, and all three Joans are doing a phenomenal job, and Keely is just really, really incredible.
Well, that's great. Let's give some details here before we wrap it up. It's called Joan Joyce, the Joan Joyce musical. It's based on Tony's book, Connecticut softball legend Joan Joyce. It's at the Seven Angels Theater, One Plank Road in Waterbury. It opens tonight, the 5th of October at 7:30. It runs through October 22nd. Most of the performances will have special guests who briefly will share their memories of Joan Joyce. And again, you're talking about the life story of a woman who, as Tony has said, many people consider possibly the greatest female athlete ever because of how good she was in so many different things. Yes, there are women who excel at gymnastics or basketball or golf or volleyball or bowling, but nobody put it together like Joan Joyce. Tony, just 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts here?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that Lauren is not only the co-writer, but she also is the lyricist for several of the songs. And one of the songs that she did the lyrics for is a standout song called Winter. People love that song, but all the songs are fantastic. And I'm telling you, they made a convert out of me in terms of a musical. I never thought I'd see the day where one of my books would be turned into such a wonderful musical. But people got to see this play. I'm telling you, it's going to make their day, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful play that they'll love. They will really love. They'll learn a lot, too.
All right, a play about a local legend. The book from Tony Renzoni and Lauren Rosene making all this happen. Tony and Lauren, thanks. Good luck, and I'll keep talking about this for the next few days to make sure people get out there and see it, okay?
Wonderful. Yep. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, folks. Appreciate it. Tony Renzoni and Lauren Rosene. Once again, the Joan Joyce musical. The Connecticut softball legend Joan Joyce. It opens tonight in Waterbury at the Seven Angels Theater, 7:30 p.m. It runs through October 22nd. And, yeah, I remember watching the Raybestos Breakheads games, which I think at the time were on Connecticut Public Television. And I forgot her role with the Connecticut Falcons, too. And her time on the LPGA Tour, 17 putts. How do you do 17 putts on 18 holes? I don't get it. Okay, back to open phones momentarily at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How do we make heads or tails of what's going on in D.C.? Joining us right now, professor of politics, scholar in residence, Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University to try and chop through all of this for us. Gary, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Paul. Good to hear from you.
Gary, your course material writes itself every day. This is
oh my gosh.
I mean, I know you have a syllabus for the course, but there must be some days, Gary, where you have to tell your students, "Okay, let's talk about X, Y, and Z first." Man, oh man. It's been wild.
Yeah. The syllabus goes right out the window sometimes.
Yeah.
And this is unprecedented what happened, and we're spending a lot of time talking about it, and the students are wondering, you know, exactly what does this mean? And it's difficult to explain because it's so bizarre. And now, believe it or not, I think you've heard, too, that we not only have a couple in-house candidates for that job, but there's actually some Republicans who are talking about having Donald Trump serve as speaker. Which is possible. It's possible.
It's yes. Explain. Now, I was just discussing. Now, Gary, some say it's possible. Some say it isn't because of some law or some amendment. But you consider it possible?
Yeah. I mean, the Constitution does not absolutely specify who has to be a Speaker of the House. And so I know that it seems outrageous, and we all, our speakers are always, you know, from inside the House of Representatives. Mm-hmm. But my understanding of the Constitution, and yes, there is some different interpretations of this, but the interpretation that I am familiar with is that a speaker can come possibly from the outside. Yes.
You know, Gary, part of this is happening, correct, because there's such a razor-thin majority of Republicans in the House, and for McCarthy to have been elected Speaker, and I think you mentioned this when we talked about this a couple of appearances ago, he basically went ahead, Gary, and okayed a rule that a lot of people said was ridiculous, that only one member of the House could seek to oust him, and that's exactly what happened. Huh? Did we lose Gary? I think we did. Hi, Chris, if you could give Gary a call back there, if you could dial him up again, sir, and we'll get him back on the phone. All right. Once again, Dr. Gary Rose is the guest, and we are talking about the scenario regarding why exactly what we saw happen in Washington did exactly happen. Why was it so easy for essentially a handful of people, you know, Matt Gaetz and then four others and then five others after that, to do what they did? I think Gary's back with us now. So, Gary, the question is, and I think you had mentioned this early on when we talked about this, you know, Kevin McCarthy kind of made a deal with the devil, right, when he allowed a rule that ended up being used against him where only one person could seek his ouster.
I know. Yeah, I know. A motion to remove the speaker, and it's only a one-person vote. And, yes, and, you know, it is interesting. He did make that deal, and I am wondering if at the time he just didn't think it was possible that somebody like Matt Gaetz would actually use it. And if he didn't, that really was not very perceptive on his part. I think you should have seen this coming, but a motion to vacate, as it's called, yes, only requires one vote, if you can believe that. I know that Karl Rove today recommends that they make a rule change and change it to 10, which mm-hmm. certainly to me makes much more sense.
And speaking of people like Karl Rove and other people I know, Newt Gingrich has said this, Gary, there are a lot of people who think, you know, politics aside and all the maneuvering aside, there are people who want Matt Gaetz booted from the House. I mean, this is how angry
yeah.
some people are.
I know, yeah. Gingrich is calling for his expulsion, which I know is difficult to do that. But, you know, they have to, the moderates, if you will. I mean, you know, when you say moderate, you know, we're really talking about moderate conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
They have to levy some type of sanction against what he did. And the Democrats are just, you know, jumping for joy for what happened, because now they can sow chaos with the whole situation. You know, eight Republicans simply joining with the Democrats to remove a speaker. And, you know, we're talking well over 90% of Republicans that were supporting Kevin McCarthy. There has to be some type of penalty against those renegades or Confederates, whatever you want to call them, who did this. And now what this does is it really, you know, brings things to a grinding halt as well, what the Republican Party was achieving under McCarthy. And he was, you know, whether you like him or not, he was making some progress on a variety of issues there. And so, and then, of course, those who favor investigations of the Trump administration, that's going to probably slow down tremendously as well without McCarthy there. So Gates, you know, some feel Gates is just trying to raise money, which he does. He's got a safe seat in Florida, and he's planning on running for governor, apparently, and is getting all kinds of airtime on this to his advantage, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, and Gary, there's also the allegation, you may have seen this too, that Gates is fuming that McCarthy never killed an ethics investigation against him, which I think is actually still going on. And there were allegations of young women and stuff, and he wanted that quashed. And McCarthy said, no, I'm not quashing it.
That's right. And so that's why when you see this happening, you can't help but think that this effort on Gates's part, the motion to vacate, is more personal than anything else. And he has a lot of animosity towards Kevin McCarthy. And you're right, McCarthy did not quash the investigation that's going on, the ethics investigation, as you say. And Gates is probably, he felt this was his opportunity to get back at him. And this is an individual who really was just putting himself first and foremost above the institution of the House.
And Gary, finally, you look at this, and as you say, timing is everything in life. This couldn't have been worse if you're a Republican, or if you are an independent or a moderate who tends to vote Republican. You know, you had that Gallup poll that came out a few days ago that said, hey, Republicans have a 14-point lead on the economy. And then how about this late yesterday and today? I don't know whether you saw this. The White House saying, hey, you know what? Maybe we're going to build a lot more border wall. and they roll out this rule. They're basically going to suspend environmental rules to build a big chunk of border wall. So between the border, Gary, and the economy, they know they're in trouble. But the Matt Gaetz thing, it overshadows it all.
It really does. Yeah, I heard that President Biden, who, of course, criticized Trump for his border wall, is now promoting, 20 miles of it or something like that?
Yeah.
But, you know, what's really unfortunate here, Paul, is people are looking at this, voters are looking at this, and what they are concluding is that the Republican Party cannot govern. And you know, for a party to really win an election, it has to be perceived as a party that is responsible and capable of governing the country. And when we see a speaker removed like this, which is unprecedented in U.S. history, and removed so quickly by a small band of renegades and the House in disarray as a result, the Republicans are going to take a hit because of this. They really are. I'm not saying that they're going to lose the House, but there's a real possibility now that they're going to because of Matt Gaetz.
And Gary, one final thing. If you notice, this never happens on the Democratic side. One or two of them get cranky for a day or two. And then, you know, when Nancy Pelosi was their caucus leader or whenever, they apparently got pulled into the office, Gary, and were told to shut up because Democrats never engage in the circular firing squads. They don't do it.
No, that's right. And a candidate like Matt Gaetz would never have any say or influence or leverage at all if he was in the Democratic Party, because that party is ideologically cohesive and they're very united, you know. And it has become obviously a pretty left wing party down there, but they are marching in step. You know, Hakeem Jeffries, he certainly, some say, gee, why didn't McCarthy, you know, reach across the aisle and get, you know, maybe 8 or 9, 10 Democrats to at least say, yeah, okay, we'll vote for you. Well, that's because that could not have happened. I'm sure that the minority leader there would not have allowed that, because the Democrats are very, very united. They really do march to the will of the leader, as they did with Pelosi. Sure.
Absolutely. Dr. Gary Rose, scholar in residence, professor of politics, Sacred Heart University. Gary, thank you as always. We'll chat down the road, my friend.
Okay, Paul.
Appreciate it. Yep, Dr. Gary Rose. Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, a lot of you folks who are on my side of the aisle or tend to vote conservative or Republican, I mean, you know, sometimes our party or our ideological thinking, it approaches clown show. It is. This is a clown show going on right now. All right, but again, it's entertaining. And we get to talk about it here. Dr. Gary Rose, Ph.D., professor of politics, scholar in residence at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. So as I've been saying to you over and over and over and over again, they were going to have to do it. They are probably doing it, kicking and screaming. But it's apparently going to happen, and how effective it is, I have no idea. What am I talking about? Hey, Paul, how are you? Good to have you with us, if you just said hello to me. What am I talking about here at 2:15 on a Thursday? AP story here that's been picked up by a lot of sources. The Department of Homeland Security posted the announcement to the U.S. Federal Registry this week that the Biden White House is waving. Oh, my God. The left is already going crazy about this. You Democrats, you okay out there when I read this to you? Don't choke on lunch or your midday coffee break snack. The Biden White House is announcing it waived 26 federal laws yesterday, Wednesday, in the Federal Register. And they will use a sweeping executive power that was used by the Trump White House, and they're going to build a border wall. Oh, my God. Say it isn't so. Yes. Yes, Maude. Yes, Gramps. Ha ha. The Department of Homeland Security, as I said, posted the announcement on the U.S. Federal Registry. With not too many details, they have to build, they say, a border wall. Yes. Oh, my God. You mean people might actually not be able to walk into the country unannounced? Yeah, that's the point. They're going to build this in Starr County, Texas. Part of a busy Border Patrol sector seeing high illegal entry. That's according to government data, some 245,000 illegals have crossed so far in this fiscal year in the Rio Grande Valley sector, which contains 21 counties. Alejandro Mayorkas, our incompetent Homeland Security Secretary, said, quote, "There's presently an acute and immediate need to construct physical barriers and roads in the vicinity of the border of the U.S. in order to prevent unlawful entry into the U.S. and the project areas." Well, no, you know what, Dick Tracy. Thanks for finally waking up. Now, you know what's going on here. They're seeing the polls. They're seeing the polls. And they're finally saying, hey, I don't care. We don't care how many criminal charges are facing Donald Trump. This border thing is out of control. And what did I tell you? I said a few seconds ago, eventually they would have to do this. You've got to be out of your mind if you think we can control the border without walls. Without walls high enough to prevent people from getting over them. Again, I'm not against legal immigration or regularly verifiable and legal means of claiming asylum. I've never said that. But this notion that, you know, 200 and 230 or 40 or 50 or 60,000 people a month coming into this country have valid asylum claims is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. 3 million people, 3 million people with border encounters at the southern border wrapping up the last fiscal year. And it's exactly what I told you, folks. Unless we have the intestinal fortitude, the marbles, shall we say, for men, of course, for women, we're speaking rhetorically, I guglioni, as my people like to say, unless you grow a set, excuse my allusion here, it's not going to stop. The Clean Air Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, and Endangered Species Act were some of the federal laws waived by DHS to make way for construction that will use money from a congressional appropriation in 29 for border wall construction. The waivers avoid time-consuming reviews and lawsuits challenging the violation of environmental laws. So you see what just happened here. And actually, I'm glad the Biden White House did this. They basically told all the environmentalists in that area, go screw. That's what they told them. Go pound sand, because we have people just walking into the country or using these coyotes, these human smugglers, to get in here. Well, thank you. And they've known this. They've known this for years. They see the video. They get the reports. But here's the thing that pushed them on this now. You know, previously, when the border crossings were less than they are, you'd get coverage on Fox, you'd get coverage on Newsmax, you'd get some coverage on the Drudge Report, but now, you know, I sit here when I'm done with the show at night and I keep the TV on in the studio and I watch World News Tonight from ABC and I'm watching, you know, the CBS Evening News and NBC Nightly News. And, oh, my God, I'm like, knock me over. The regular networks are reporting how out of control the border is. So the Biden people, the White House, they know they have to do this. The hilly ranch lands of Starr County, sitting between Zapata and McAllen, Texas, is home to about 65,000 residents, sparsely populating about 1,200 square miles that form part of the Lower Rio Grande Valley National Wildlife Refuge. Although no maps were provided in the announcement, CPB announced the project in June, began gathering public comments in August when it shared a map of the additional construction that can add up to 20 miles to the existing barrier system. Good. Good. County Judge Eloy Vera said, the concern is we have an area that's highly erosive. There's a lot of arroyos, pointing to the creeks cutting through the ranch land leading to the river. Well, Judge, too bad. Concern is shared with environmental advocates who say structures will run through public lands, habitats of endangered plants, and species like the ocelot, a spotted wild cat. Well, that's just too bad. I'm sorry to say that, but listen, we'd love, you know, in an ideal world, which we don't live in, you'd need no border barriers. People would respect the, here's the line. Okay, I won't cross it. I'm tempted to cross it, but I won't cross it because I have a respect for the borders and culture of another land. But we don't have that. We have people who feel they have asylum claims, and we vet those. We have people who make bogus asylum claims, and we have, people in other lands who come here through human smugglers. So, unfortunately, it looks like the spotted wild ocelot's going to have to move somewhere. I'm sorry if you think that's crass, but I think our borders are a little more important than a spotted wild ocelot. And you know what? Animals are smart. They've been on the earth longer than people have. They'll figure out where to go. It's like I always say with bird feeders. You know, we talk about bird feeders when it comes to keeping bears away from homes, what do they say, don't put out the bird feeders? That's another thing. What are you feeding the birds for? Birds have been feeding themselves for millions of years. You think they sit there and say, hey, I'm going to flap here until she puts out that crap from the pet store. We have to protect the animals. The animals are fine. They'll get used to it. Birds don't need the cheap suet from, you know, whatever mega pet store. The DHS decision on Wednesday, yesterday, is a contrast to the White House posturing when a proclamation to end the construction on January 20th, 2021 stated, here's what the White House did say, when, of course, Mr. Trump left and Joe Biden was inaugurated. Building a massive wall that spans the entire southern border is not a serious policy solution. I guess it is when your poll numbers suck. I guess when we've gone from somewhat suckage to high-level overdrive, kick in the afterburner suckage, we're going to build a border wall now. Oh, man. This is funny. This is funny. Congressman Henry Cuellar. Here's what a member of Congress says, right? A guy from Texas, which is seeing people just waltz across. Here it is. Quote, a border wall is a 14th century solution to a 21st century problem. It will not bolster border security in Starr County. I continue to stand against the wasteful spending of taxpayer dollars on an ineffective border wall. No, Congressman, you continue to stand for making it easy for people to cross into the country. Why don't you say it that way? Political proponents of the border wall said the waivers should be used as a launching pad for a shift in policy. And there you go. There you go. So what did I keep telling you for months and months as these numbers kept growing and growing and growing? What did I tell you? I said eventually they were going to have to do it. Now, what the reaction will be, who knows? But again, let's go back to the proclamation that the White House signed on Inauguration Day, January 20th, just 2.5 short years ago. Building a massive wall that spans the entire southern border is not a serious policy solution. But I guess it may be partway now.